Good morning.
Labas rytas.
Welcome back to the committee. Let's pick up where we left off. Under item one, if there are no objections, the agenda may be adopted without amendment. Any objections? Then the agenda is adopted as stands. I'd like to remind all members that it's a good idea to speak your mother tongue if interpretation is available for it. And the interpreters invite us to speak smoothly at natural speed, and they thank you in advance for your support. As per usual, the file for the meeting is available in e-form through the e-meeting application, and it will be web-streamed. The Secretariat has received a series of corrigenda on the Parliament's position adopted in the first reading during the other period. They have been passed on to us on Friday the 30th of August by email in line with the Rule 251. The Parliament has to check the corrigenda. We've received four. No political group nor five members raise objections by the deadline, which was set for yesterday at 5 p.m. and therefore the MV committee, the corrigenda approved by the MV committee will be announced in the next plenary session. That takes us to item three. Recommendations from the coordinators were circulated, and if there are no objections, they can be deemed approved. Are there any objections? Nope. Then they're taken as approved. Item four, adoption of the minutes for the meeting of the 23rd of July 2024. Item five, general budget of the European Union for the financial year 2025. Now, the consideration of draft opinion in letter form and consideration of budget amendments. I will take the floor as the rapporteur. The annual opinion on the budget is an essential step for the committee, one of the most important ones indeed, which allows us to pool our efforts in a legislative from a legislative point of view and bring them into line with the budget and guarantee the necessary resources then and make sure that the correct resources are available to support our ideas as the committee. So this is about our priorities for the next year so that we can put them to our colleagues in the budget committee. So for the 2025 budget, the opinion there, I would invite the committee to guarantee the financial resources and also the human resources to implement the legislation which was adopted during the last cycle on climate, environment, public health and food safety. I'd like to remind you that according to the MFF, which was adopted for 2021-27, the EU has earmarked at least 30% of its budget for climate-related aims. I welcome the fact that the budget for 2025 actually exceeds that objective, but we invite the committee to continue looking at mainstreaming biodiversity. The EU's efforts towards a climate-neutral society by 2050 is an opportunity to shape a better future for all of us, not only Europeans, and that is why in the draft opinion we stress the importance of boosting the EU's role at international level, increasing financing for EU efforts aimed at protecting the environment and addressing climate change at global level. And finally, I think it's important to stress in negative terms the reduction, the cuts in financing for the EU for Health budget right line, with the recent Mpox epidemic and other challenges ahead of us, I think that this is an important aspect, and it has to have the necessary funding so that we can build stronger, more resilient health systems which are accessible for all. And I'm waiting the comments from our colleagues. Now, before I give the floor to the shadows, I would like to remind everyone that immediately afterwards we will move on to Catch the Eye, so that anyone wishing to take the floor will have the possibility to do so for 1.5 minutes. So, I will open the floor.
Dear colleagues, regarding the budgetary amendments, I call on your support to address the 20% decrease in the total budget of the European Union for Health Programme over 2025 to 2027. I welcome the broad party consensus on increasing the budget. I have been a Minister of Health during the pandemic, so I know the importance of increasing the budget of health. Just before we table our amendment, just a little bit after, we have seen we have a new pandemic with the Mpox. So it's important we have, as a European Union, all of our system ready and to have the funding available if needed. In addition to this, I call on your support to keep the Union Civil Protection Mechanism with the proper funding to be able to respond effectively and efficiently in times of crisis caused by the extreme weather conditions Europe is facing, particularly the southern countries. The last few weeks, we have seen everything what is happening with the climate change in many European Union countries, so it's important as well this line of the budget. Horizon European Union, which is key to our efforts to tackle climate change and become the definitive global center of excellence. And the very interesting pilot project on health issue, particularly on pediatric cancer. We know, again, how important is pediatric cancer. I wish we could increase funding in all programs. However, we have to remain financially prudent and prioritize. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Passo la parola a Alexander Vondra.
Alexander Vondra now has the floor.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, ECR, we are the conservatives, so we are really careful in taking more public money out of the human pockets. So, we prefer, we know that the resources are limited. And if we need to increase somewhere, we need to decrease elsewhere. That's not to raise the taxation. So we are in favor of using our money more wisely. We as a group would oppose most of the amendments, which go in very different directions. And, you know, with regards to the climate goals, we would have a problem even to fill the targets of 2030, as it's even more clear. We are very unsuccessful in convincing the others in the globe to follow us. And I do not see that the medicine is to pay more for the others who are not doing enough. The Europeans don't have the money. We are losing the competitiveness. You know, look, the Volkswagen announcement about shutting down two factories. This is not the way forward, we are not fixed this with shipping more public money. With regards to the EU health program, yes, we share the rapporteur's concerns about the significant cuts. However, the cuts are the result of difficult decisions made by the European Council, which relocated more than 10 billion to support Ukraine. So While regrettable, these decisions reflect our current geopolitical and financial reality. So given our budget constraints, we must stick to the figures set by the European Council. Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. And now, Randy has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was sooner than I expected. But nevertheless, first of all, my congratulations to your election as our chair. I've been here in the past in this committee, and I think it's one of the most joyful and best committees to work in this parliament. So I'm looking forward to a very constructive cooperation with you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the budget, I want to emphasize just a few things. First of all, biodiversity. It's under threat more than ever before. We've seen the latest reports on the disappearance of insects. It's very crucial that we as a European Union are continuing to fight against the loss of biodiversity, and therefore Renew very strongly supports the amendments that restore the budget for the LIFE program. LIFE has for years and years been one of the most successful European programs. It has always been cheered by the European Court of Auditors and by many, many others for its huge success. So I would like to emphasize the importance of the European budget for biodiversity, and the Renew Group will certainly support those amendments that have been adopted to at least restore the budget. I always would like to emphasize the pilot project that was tabled by Martin Hoisig on EU biodiversity observation centers. It has been rated with the highest rating, and I would like to urge my colleagues to support that. Thank you very much.
Grazie. Passo adesso la parola.
Thank you. And Maria Oysala now has the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Dear colleagues, we are living in the middle of the warmest years on record, and biodiversity is declining faster than any time in human history. This all highlights the urgent and continuous actions to address environmental crisis, also reflected in the Greens EFA priorities for the budget. As investing in research is crucial in fighting these crises, we require 15% top-ups for the following horizon clusters, on which the Commission is proposing cuts now: cluster health, cluster climate, energy and mobility, as well as cluster food, bioeconomy, natural resources, agriculture and environment. The Greens also require diverse top-ups for the LIFE programme for EU's environment and climate action. Commitment for the LIFE programme is an urgent priority, and even more so in the following years with the implementation of the Nature Restoration Law. It's also crucial that the European Environment Agency can fully deliver its increased tasks and support EU's climate and environmental objectives. Therefore, we propose to increase the EEA's budget by 1.23 million euros. And last but not least, looking at the current draft budget, we are worried about achieving the EU's biodiversity objectives. The Common Agricultural Policy is a significant budgetary item for achieving the EU's biodiversity objectives and expenditure. Yet, CAP's biodiversity contribution has been revised downwards to 3% compared to the previous 4%. And therefore, we urge the Commission and other involved actors to ensure that measures are put in place to reach the biodiversity mainstreaming targets. The increased risk of natural disasters, health emergencies and armed conflicts require coordinated response and support by the Union Civil Protection Mechanism. Therefore, the Greens request 15% budget increase to ensure effective crisis management. We're also requiring 20% top-up for EU for Health programme to counter the significant budget reductions made in the MFF. It's important that this programme achieves its crucial objective to build stronger and more accessible health systems in the EU as ongoing health emergencies are showing up.
Thank you. Passo la parola.
And now the floor goes to Jonas Sjöstedt.
And here I am. I was speaking Swedish, so please put on your headphones.
We agree with the general approach that the rapporteur has in the opinion. We think it's important that we don't carry out the cuts proposed by Council. We should stick to a higher level of ambition when it comes to the environment. When we see acute crises like biodiversity, the maritime environment, and so on, it's very uncertain whether the EU is going to be able to maintain its promises in terms of reducing emissions. And when it comes to cutting down the programs which are supposed to lead to that, we think that's sending the wrong signal. So we agree with the proposed amendments to reduce the budget to a reasonable, or to have set the budget at a reasonable level. When it comes on to pandemics, we're seeing that there's another pandemic which is being prepared. It's important that the EU has the tools to tackle these things. Various members of my group have submitted some amendments on health, and also has to do with childcare, so we hope we get support for that. The EU can save money in a number of areas and should do that, but the area of the environment should not be one of those areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Passo la parola a Dania Harn.
Anja Arndt now has the floor.
Okay. Apriamo adesso la fase del catch.
So I will now open the catch the eye, in which the floor goes to those members who've asked to speak. Peter Liese gets the floor.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome everybody after hopefully a good summer recess. I can keep it short because our shadow rapporteur, Michael Hatzipantala, has made the most important points. I would just put an emphasis why we as EPP, with the support of many other groups, ask for an increase of EU for health. Sascha Fondra is right. The cutting of EU for health has been made because we need more money for Ukraine, and we as EPP strongly support any action to help Ukraine in this difficult time to defend international law and to defend also our freedom. On the other hand, member states are always very easy, and they do it very easy to cut the European programs, which have a European added value. We think they should focus also on money where member states have more control, so not the European programs should be the first to cut. And EU for Health has a significant impact, and the cutting has a significant impact. You know, HERA was doing some action to fight antibiotic resistance, and now they can't do it because of the cutting. And this may kill Europeans' life if they are not successful. So that's why we also need to do many other efforts to fight antibiotic resistance. I look at Timo Wölken and his report. But we need to increase EU for Health again. That's why we tabled this amendment, and we are happy for the support from many other groups. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo la parola a Gregory Aglione.
Thank you. Gregory Aglione has the floor. Yes, thank you. Good morning. The budget is a real opportunity to discuss global policy, particularly in terms of civil protection. Before I joined the Parliament, I was fireman in the national offices, and I have done various missions in Europe and around the world, and I've seen how climate upsets have changed. Now, I think that the aim is to boost the rescue programs funds. We need that. But on the contrary, I would ask you to think about being much more ambitious, because under the last parliament, the parliament addressed all of the causes driving climate change. But over the summer, throughout the year, we regularly see the effects of climate change, a vicious cycle, actually, in our organisations, our countries, and the whole of Europe. So I would call on us to think about a global civil protection policy, taking on board a training for firemen, men, women, the resources that need to be included, boosting certain countries, helping them purchase vehicles, firefighting planes and helicopters, and of course, mainstream new technology. You will understand that what I'm saying is not directly linked to approving or not approving a budget, but rather the ambition to have a genuine public civil protection policy. Europe really is the place where we should be able to define and push for more solidarity for our countries and for Europe. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo la parola.
Thank you. Steenbos has the floor.
Thank you so much. A lot has been said already. I want to echo all the people who are worried about what is happening right now with global warming. And I also want to encourage us to see this, that we can do with the budget, as a common investment. If we listen to what's going on right now and look at common investments in civil protection, that is saving lives, but it's also saving monies in other countries. So if we work together, we can do more, and we could do it much more efficiently and cheaper at the end of the day. This goes also in the health area. Look what COVID actually cost us. Had we been better prepared, we are actually now better prepared because we are more educated. And can we keep that level of education, and can we keep that level of spending, we can save money at the end of the day. So let's not talk about antibiotic resistance as a cost when we fight it. Let's call it an investment in reducing costs longer down the road. That's how we should view these areas. And I would encourage all of us to spend now rather than leave this for the cost of lives and for much higher costs at the end of the day.
Grazie. Passo la parola adesso.
Thank you. Our colleague Tomislav Sokol has the floor.
There, a lot has already been said about the amendment about the EU for Health program, but I would like to echo definitely what colleagues said, that investments into healthcare are most cost-effective investments, because consequences of not investing, of not being prepared, unfortunately, are much bigger. So in that sense, investing into EU for Health means cutting the costs in the end, but it's also about sending a message. So healthcare before the previous mandate was essentially a marginal topic, unfortunately, in this House, in the Parliament, but this has changed. The visibility has been raised, a lot more funding is being earmarked for healthcare, and we have to keep this momentum going. So definitely cutting the EU for Health program sends a wrong message, sends a message that healthcare is not important, and this is something that we should definitely fight. Also, when we speak about future needs of healthcare, we have the implementation of European Health Data Space, where the member states themselves in the council said they need much more money from centralized EU budget for the implementation. for the preparedness for preparation of the whole system for digitalization of healthcare. So on one side, they are saying we need more money. On the other side, they are cutting this. So I think that we need to send a very strong message that healthcare is important, that it should remain one of the policy priorities in the European Union. And by doing that, definitely that we should increase the funding for EU for Health program, not just now, but also in the next MFF. Thanks.
Grazie, passo la parola a Dimitri Tsiodras.
Thank you. Dimitri Tsiodras now has the floor.
Τονίσκει και από προηγούμενους συναδέλφους ότι...
I would agree with previous speakers in saying that we have to look at the climate change in terms of all its effects in various areas, including health and the need to increase the budget. And we need policies for protection, as mentioned by our colleague, for example, fires in the summer and floods over the year as well. And there's a huge issue of drought affecting many countries in the south as an effect of climate change. And that affects the means of production, particularly in the agricultural field, because conditions have changed enormously. I think we are continuing to take the conservative approach to this we've applied in the past with a slight increase, but we need much more drastic action so that we can support our communities in dealing with all of these repercussions which are affecting in particular the south of Europe, because under the current circumstances we'd need a very different approach to this in order to deal with all of the consequences. Thank you.
Grazie. Grazie colleghi, si è chiusa la fase.
Thank you colleagues, and that concludes the Catch the Eye. The committee members who wanted to take the floor did so, and so I will now turn to the representatives of the Commission. The floor therefore goes to Konstantinos Plevidis.
Chairman, dear members of the ENVI Committee, on behalf of the European Commission, DG Environment welcomes this opinion, which emphasized the importance of addressing climate, environmental and health challenges and supporting the European Green Deal. The ENVI's opinion highlights the need to adequate funding to implement key legislation in the areas of climate, environment, food safety and health, focusing on priorities such as climate mitigation, adaptation, just transition and circular economy. We welcome the amendments restoring the LIFE project. However, we also would like to highlight the importance of mainstreaming climate and environmental consideration in the implementation of EU funding programs, particularly cohesion policy programs. The recent Environmental Implementation Review and European Semester Country reports identify challenges and priority actions for individual member states, which can orientate actions under cohesion policy and other EU funding programs. The EU biodiversity spending target set under the EU multi-annual framework program from 2021 to 2027 requires an annual biodiversity spending level of 7.5% in 2024, reaching 10% to 2026 and to 2027. To reach these targets, we invite the Member States to fully exploit the funding opportunities in the EU programs. Investments in protected areas and ecosystem restoration, amplified by the Nature Restoration Law, bring multiple gains across the whole economy and society. Our aim is to ensure that investments supported under cohesion policy and other funding programs drive the green transition to ensure the achievement of biodiversity objectives. Mr. Chairman, dear members of the ENVI Committee, we look forward to working together to achieve the most sustainable results from the program actions over the coming years. Our services remain at your disposal for any support you may need. I give now the floor to my colleagues of DG Klima. Yanos.
Thank you, Chair.
Ha preso la parola Ioannos. Ioannis Asimakis.
Ioannis Asimakis is asked for the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the European Commission and the Department of Climate Action in particular welcomes the draft opinion of this committee and, of course, welcomes any support to at least restore the draft budget put forward by the European Commission following the proposed cuts by the Council. Thank you. DJ Sante would like to.
Sì, ascoltiamo adesso l'intervento.
Yes, the floor goes to General Lettens for DG Sante.
Thank you, Chair. Dear Chair, honorable members, on behalf of DG Sante, we would like to welcome the support to restore the credit for the EU for Health program and to the food safety, as well as to the support to provide sufficient resources for all the decentralized agencies under our remit, which are in particular the Chemicals Agency for its biocides activities, the Food Safety Authority, the European Medicines Agency. We in particular support the request to restore the credits for EU for Health following the cut of 1 billion that occurred during the midterm revision of the MFF. And of course, we are in need of all the credits that we can obtain. And we also need the credits requested under the food safety, given the many, many outbreaks that have occurred in recent years for certain animal diseases such as African swine fever, avian influenza. We thank you for all the support and are happy to answer any questions in future. Thank you.
Ok, thank you. Ringrazio tutti per.
So thank you everyone for your input. I'm sure that we'll find the best possible way to reflect the interests of the ENVI committee, or rather the interest reflecting the remit of the committee in the budget. I'd remind you that the vote for the amendments for the budget will take place today at 12 o'clock. The vote on the overall letter is scheduled for the 12th of September. That takes us now to item 6, which is an exchange of views. This was requested, an exchange of views with the Commission and the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, ECDC and EMA, on the EU Emergency Response Actions to the Outbreak of Mpox. On the 14th of August, the WHO declared a public health emergency of international concern in view of an increase in Mpox cases in Africa. Recently, we saw the first case in Europe, and the ECDC, European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, on the 16th of August completed its rapid risk assessment for the EU EAA with a risk assessed as low. The Director General, Wolfgang Philips, will deal with this, and we have the ECDC represented by its director as well, and Emma Cook is here also for the Medicines Agency. So, Emma.
Passo la parola al Wolfgang.
So I'll give the floor to Wolfgang Philips.
Thank you very much, and good morning. HERA was created during the COVID pandemic as part of the European Health Union to ensure that Europe is better prepared and is faster in its responses to cross-border health emergencies Since day one, 3 years ago, of its establishment, HERA has designed processes to monitor emerging health events, to assess the availability of medical countermeasures, and to identify needs for interventions. A recent example was, for example, in 2022, HERA was able to test its capacities to procure and deploy medical countermeasures when WHO declared a global outbreak of Mpox, a different clade, a different strain, as a public health emergency of international concern. At this time, HERA directly donated 330,000 vaccines to EU member states for the immediate response actions and also put in place joint procurement options for medium to longer term vaccines and therapeutics acquisition. Even after the end of this public health emergency declaration by WHO, which was announced in 2023, HERA continued to monitor the Mpox situation very closely, as it was clear that the virus was still circulating, in particular in countries in Central Africa and Western Africa, like the Democratic Republic of Congo, where we're still seeing a lot of cases which are increasing. As a result of our intelligence gathering and reports from the ECDC and other sources, HERA triggered its internal coordination mechanism in April 2024 to assess the medical countermeasures situation for Africa. It was clear from the engagements with other international organizations, such as the Africa CDC, WHO or Gavi, that vaccine provisions and donations would be needed to be assessed. HERA also coordinated with bilateral actors such as Japan and also the US to share information and to align on possible actions around donations of vaccines and other medical countermeasures. But in order to act on vaccine donation, the minimum requirement was that African countries authorized the vaccines to be shipped. This was also a requirement of the manufacturer to release the vaccines without imposing strict provisions on liability. Chronologically, on 13th of August, Africa CDC declared Mpox a public health emergency of continental security and called on the global community to mobilize 2 million vaccine doses for Africa. Following day, 14th of August, WHO declared public health emergency of international concern under IHR, and thanks to our preparedness activities, we were able to immediately respond to the Africa CDC call for global solidarity, building on working arrangements signed with the Commission and Africa CDC in 2024 and the existing agreements with the manufacturer Bavarian Nordic. We were able to negotiate vaccine procurements and donation agreements and to announce the signature of a contract on the very same day when WHO declared the fight. I would like to underline that the unprecedented speed of the vaccine purchase was only possible because of the preparation and the continuous contacts. Of course, this purchase and donation is also made possible with the support of Bavarian Nordic, which contributed 40,000 of the 250,000 doses to the total donation, and the Africa CDC, of course, which will distribute the doses based on established continental vaccine strategy and regional needs. The first delivery of vaccines procured by HERA will reach DRC this week. Our acting head of HERA is actually on its way to Kinshasa for further arrangements. In addition to the donation of the 250,000 vaccines, Commissioner Kyriakides called upon EU member states to display European solidarity and to consider bilateral donations in a Team Europe spirit. Member states have responded to this call, and HERA is currently coordinating the Team Europe approach to ensure that these donations are organized and distributed efficiently as possible to affected countries across Africa. At the moment, two African countries have authorized the Bavarian Nordic vaccines, and the African CDC is working to finalize a continental response plan. Commission will also continue collaborating closely with member states and our global partners, as I mentioned, WHO, Africa CDC, Gavi, and particularly UNICEF, to coordinate on donations and deliveries. And of course, vaccines are only one element in response to an outbreak, complementing other tools such as increased surveillance, research, communication, and strengthened health systems. With other Commission services, we are exploring how the Team Europe initiative on manufacturing access to vaccines, medicines and health technologies in Africa, so-called MAF+, can support manufacturing capacities in the mid and long term. Relying on local vaccine manufacturing is not a viable option right now, at least not for Mpox. For example, with Africa CDC, we are discussing how to increase the availability of locally produced testing kits as part of as part of a partnership to accelerate mpox testing in Africa, worth 3.5 million. We are in the process of finalizing agreements to increase the scope and the value of that support. Also, partners of Durable, the HERA Lab network, have developed a PCR assay, so a testing assay, for the detection of this particular clade 1B, which is already being used in some African countries. I would like to mention here, for example, Burundi. Regarding the EU, I would like to be clear that the risk from this virus remains low, according to the ECDC. My colleague, Dr. Randy Wagner, is going to provide you more information on this. But despite the low risk posed by the virus in Europe, we continue to work to ensure countries have access to the relevant MCMs, medical countermeasures for this disease. In addition, for example, in addition to the donation of these over 330,000 vaccines in 2022 and 2023 to EU member states, HERA has also provided options for member states to purchase additional doses of vaccines and therapeutics against mpox via joint procurement contracts, which are still in place. In the current epidemiological context, and according to member states' feedback, they should have sufficient medical countermeasures capacity to fulfill their needs, as shown also by the willingness of several EU member states to donate doses to our partners in Africa. Should the epidemiological situation evolve and the risk for the EU increase, member states still have options to activate rescue EU stockpiles, which were established over the past 2 years in collaboration with DG ECHO, our colleagues in the Commission, and which can be mobilized as a last resort in case of extreme need. Of course, HERA continues to monitor any new reports together with our colleagues in the Commission and the ECDC in particular, in case there's a need to reassess the medical countermeasure situation in Europe. In summary, we should all keep in mind that one of the lessons learned from COVID-19 is that support for Africa and other regions is also important for protecting the EU. Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. Dr. Randy Wagner, ECDC Director, has the floor.
Well, thank you, Chair, dear members of the ENVI Committee. I'm really happy to be here today on behalf of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control as the new Director. Well, during the past weeks, we've been hearing a lot of news about the growing outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. And I'm sure that many of you, just like me, have been approached by many people asking many questions, such as, is this outbreak comparable to any other infectious disease or previous outbreaks, such as COVID-19? Or could this be the next pandemic in Europe? Or what should be done about it? Well, and due to these rapid epidemiological developments and due to these uncertainties, the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control immediately updated its risk assessment of mpox, which was published about 2 weeks ago. And let me tell you the main message and the main outcome of our risk assessment up front. So the main outcome, based on the current situation, is that the overall risk for the general European population is low. Well, when we talk about mpox, I'm sure you have heard that there are two clades. There is clade 1 and clade 2. And let me explain. These are distinct clades of the mpox virus, clade 1 with subclades 1A and 1B. And the 1B is actually the newly emerging subclade. And then there is subclade 2. And subclade 2 was the virus which caused the outbreak of mpox in Europe and globally 2 years ago in 2022. That was mainly transmitted through sexual contacts at that time. Well, thanks to the European Member States' fast response and the ECDC's coordination, the number of people infected with the clade 2 virus have come down to very low levels today and this year. The preparedness, however, the mpox preparedness plans in the member states from the 22 outbreaks, they are still in place. And I think this is a very important circumstance and a very good circumstance right now regarding the current situation. What's going on right now? Since November 2023, we have seen a notable increase of mpox cases in DRC in Africa and a rapid spreading of the virus to neighboring countries. While the circulating virus has predominantly been mpox virus clade 1, so it's not clade 2 like in the former outbreak, but it's this time clade 1, and according to the data from the Africa CDC, with more severe clinical symptoms and a higher mortality rate than with the clade 2. To date, in 2024, over 20,000 people have been confirmed infected, mainly with mpox clade 1, and 582 deaths have been reported. So what is the difference between clade 1 and clade 2? Well, while clade 2 spreads mainly through sexual contacts, clade 1 is more commonly spreading through other routes of transmission, mainly close contacts within the household or zoonotic transmission, and often this happens to children. Although all age groups are affected at the moment, the data show that infections by the subclade 1B virus concerns mostly the adult population, while infections by subclade 1A concerns mostly children. However, and this is very important to know, that there are many open questions right now, many unknowns regarding the transmission routes, regarding transmissibility, and also regarding the severity of the disease of this new emerging clade 1. Furthermore, we assume that the real size of the outbreak in Africa could be much, much larger. This is due to severe underreporting and underassertment. So what is the situation in Europe right now? Well, to date, as it has been mentioned already, there has only been one imported case of clade 1 in Europe on August 15, and this happened in Stockholm in Sweden. This person had a recent travel history to an African country. Well, according to the ECDC's risk assessment, we have to be prepared that more of imported cases will occur to the European Union. That is why it is so important for European countries to stay prepared to detect infections as rapid as possible to prevent further spreading within Europe. What is the ECDC's response? Well, there are two main important areas of action for us right now. First, support the EU member states in preparedness and response to the mpox situation, including surveillance, laboratory diagnostics, risk communication, contact tracing, and many other public health issues to consider. And we do this in close collaboration with the European Commission, with the EMA, WHO, and HERA. Second, the second area of action of the ECDC is on the ground in DRC, in Africa. So we have an epidemiologist, an ECDC expert, deployed at the moment in DRC through the EU Health Task Force mechanism. This is happening in collaboration with Africa CDC, WHO, DG ECHO, and DG INPA. And this is very important, first of all, to support the African public health authorities to mitigate the impact of the African outbreak in order to control the outbreak in Africa, to avoid further spreading to other continents. And second, to learn more about the virus, the clade 1, and to close the gaps of knowledge right now. So what are the ECDC's recommendations for the European Union right now? First, raising awareness. Raising awareness among clinicians is of utmost importance, raising awareness among the public. Second, effective preparedness and response capacities, including surveillance, lab testing, which includes also genomic sequencing, what we need to differentiate between clade 1 and clade 2, and also contact tracing. Third, providing advice to travelers going to areas with active virus circulation on preventive measures such as avoiding contact with wild animals or people suspected or confirmed with mpox. Fourth, in addition, vaccination should be considered for European travelers to areas with a high virus circulation, especially people at high risk for severe disease outcome.
As we address the current MPOX situation, one thing needs to be kept in mind. MPOX is not the new COVID. MPOX and COVID-19 spread in different ways. They have completely different risks, and we also have an effective vaccine in place right now. This was not the case in 2020 when COVID-19 started. So I would like to conclude by stressing again that the risk for the general population in Europe is low based on the current data. However, we need to be prepared. We need to be prepared for importation of MPOX cases to Europe. And there is a need for strong and reliable cooperation and collaboration. That's why we work together with our partners at the European as well as at the global level, which enables us for more effective responses to any public health emergencies such as MPOX. Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. We shall now hear from Emma Cook, EMA Executive Director.
Thank you very much. Dear Chair, dear Honourable Members of the European Parliament, as Executive Director of the European Medicines Agency, it's really an honour for me to meet you at this first ENVI committee after the EU elections, and I'm very much looking forward to working with you during the new parliamentary term. Now, today, I'm pleased to give you an update on EMA's activities related to the recent MPOX outbreak in Africa. And this is all about our preparedness and building on our experience during the 2022 MPOX public health emergency. As you know, the MPOX public health emergency, which started in 2022, affected more than 110 countries. And our experience and actions at that time mean that we are well prepared as regards medical countermeasures for the current outbreak. We have one vaccine, Imvanex, for the prevention of MPOX, and one therapeutic, Tesovirimat, for treatment of MPOX, and they were evaluated by the EMA and approved in 2022. Both authorised products have been used during the previous emergency and have proven to be safe and effective. Almost 2 million doses of the Imvanex vaccine or equivalent have been deployed worldwide and approximately 300,000 doses in the EU. These medicines are also suitable for use in the current outbreak, even though, as we have just heard, the clade of the virus is different. Now, Imvanex, the vaccine, the authorised vaccine, is currently only authorised in adults, but we at EMA level are already addressing and assessing data to determine whether the indication can be extended to adolescents, and we plan to conclude that assessment very shortly. As we have just heard, the risk for the general European population right now is low. But we know very clearly that outbreaks like this are best fought and stopped where they happen. So this is one of the reasons that we are also actively supporting the public health response in the African countries that are most affected by the outbreak. We at EMA have been engaging closely with the regulators in Africa and with the World Health Organization for many months, well before the recent WHO declaration. And we consider this crucial and beneficial both for people in Africa and for our citizens in the EU. For example, regulators across Africa, including in the Democratic Republic of Congo, have already relied upon the EMA assessment to support national authorizations for Imvanex. EMA is also providing scientific and assessment input to the World Health Organization to expedite emergency use listing or pre-qualification of this vaccine, as this will ultimately support procurement decisions of the UN and other bodies. Availability of effective and safe vaccines in Africa will help protect people from MPOX and also prevent its global spread. As regards the possibility of use in limited supply situations, EMA in August 22 provided advice on possible dose sparing of Imvanex via intradermal administration. this advice is still valid and can be used so that more people could be vaccinated in the case that vaccine supplies were limited. Under EMA's extended mandate regulation, which this House adopted in 2021, the agency's emergency task force, the ETF, has been proactive to ensure that we continue to be well prepared. The ETF has met regularly to discuss how to best tackle Mpox and to assess any new data that emerges with respect to the EU-approved medicines. It's extremely important, but also very challenging, to collect further evidence during the current outbreak in Africa, because this tells us more about how the approved medicines work in different settings. So we're therefore working closely with WHO and with medicines authorities in Africa to support data collection and the conduct of large clinical studies across different African countries. Given the dynamics of the current outbreak in Africa, we need to ensure that data is generated to support the use of vaccines in younger children. There is already a study on children planned in DRC and Uganda later this year, and EMA stands available to provide scientific support to ensure that well-designed clinical trials can provide the evidence needed. And we are strongly advocating for avoiding duplication and fragmentation. We are also proactively engaging with medicines developers, looking at how we can support and advance the development of other vaccines and therapeutics that could provide additional protection against Mpox. So to summarize, we have authorized safe and effective medicines in Europe that are available for use in the member states. EMA is also working very closely with the World Health Organization and African authorities and the Commission, both DG HERA and DG SANTE, to support registration and access to those authorized medicines also in Africa. I can assure you that we will continue to work intensively on this health challenge going forward. Thank you for the invitation to update you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Now we'll hear from group coordinators or their representatives, and we'll also have catch the eye so members of the committee will be able to come in. Peter Lisa.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you that you put this issue on the agenda after the request of EPP. And thank you to our speakers. I have three important messages that I took from the presentations today and from all the information that I gathered. First, we all need to stay calm. This outbreak is not comparable with COVID, and most likely it will not be like COVID. The second point is, but we have to be aware, there will most likely be cases in the European Union. I agree with Mrs. Randy Wagner here. And if that happens, Europe needs to act together, and not only member states need to act individually. And third, it's a big problem for Africa. So for the moment, I don't see a big problem for Europe, but for Africa, it's already a big problem. And I was quite impressed when I heard from EMA staff that there is a clinical trial on the antiviral medicine. And not only it showed that the medicine works and you are better off if you get the medicine, but even if you don't get the medicine, if you get the placebo, but you are included in the clinical trial, the survival rate is much bigger, which means a good medical system helps. And that's why we are rather safe in Europe. But also it shows that what we need to do in Africa is to show solidarity and not only to deliver the vaccine, but to help with the medical infrastructure. It's a long-term issue, but it's very important. And we cannot rely on solidarity with Africa when it comes to geopolitical issues or when we need resources. We also need to help Africa now. And I think it's not only an issue for DG Sante and EU for Health, it's also something for ECHO and our external policy, because this is an important dimension. So I encourage you to work with ECHO and the External Action Service. I have very few questions. First of all, there is a stock in Europe when we have a serious outbreak. How big is this stock? How many vaccines do you have in RescEU? A second point, I understood that Sweden has already given some clear advice for travelers. Wouldn't it be a good idea to do it together in Europe? I have understood that member states have no appetite, but what is the purpose of having recommendations from one country and not for the neighboring country? People are traveling inside Europe. And last but not least, we have vaccination recommendations that are based on the 2022 outbreak. Now we see significant changes in the risk groups. For example, many children are affected. Wouldn't it be a good idea to have common vaccination recommendations adapted to the new situation? Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Timo Volkan.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I would also like to thank you all for being here and for your presentations, which indeed help to understand the situation very well. So thanks for being available today on this timely exchange. It is for me very encouraging to hear and to see that the EU has been proactive in its actions, including through vaccine donations procured by HERA to mitigate the threat of the recent mpox outbreak becoming widespread in Europe. And it feels good to see that you are monitoring the situation and you're very transparent about that. This is really reassuring also for our citizens. As we all know, and as the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us, health security threats have no borders, and it's good to see that we act according to this. This is why I think the WHO rightly classifies the recent outbreak of mpox in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the neighboring regions as a public health emergency of international concern. However, we must also remember that such international threats require a collective and solidarity-driven response across borders. We recognize that the 215,000 vaccine donations will not be sufficient, which is why further coordination with member states and additional donations at the member states level are crucial. It is encouraging to see many member states committing to or already making further donations of mpox vaccines for the national stockpiles, from the national stockpiles. Ultimately, this will help to mitigate the risk of a further outbreak in the EU. However, it is particularly disappointing to observe the behavior of certain member states, including the health minister of the Netherlands, of the PVV, and the Patriots for Europe, who have blocked the donation of 100,000 vaccines from national reserves, despite the majority support in Parliament for such a donation. And with this in mind, I would like to ask, what is the current status of EU member states' procurements and donations of mpox vaccines and therapeutics, particularly in response to the Commission's request on August 22? Additionally, what would you say to those member states to prevent unnecessary stockpiling of vaccines while ensuring the maintenance of adequate national reserves? And clarity on this issue is vital to ensure that we collectively meet our commitments and address global needs and protect our citizens. My next question is directed to the Commission. We are all aware of recent budget cuts to EU for Health. We discussed it in the previous discussion here today and to Horizon Europe funding. I would like to ask specifically how these cuts will impact HERA's ability to respond to further threats, given that the current contribution of 215,000 doses, while significant, falls short of the EU's potential in demonstrating global solidarity in this outbreak. And I am concerned that we may have to have too quickly forgotten the shortcomings we faced during the COVID-19 outbreak. Are you already in a position to identify gaps or specific constraints in the EU's response to the mpox outbreak that could be better addressed through additional funding or measures? Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. Mathilde Onjouet has the floor.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, ECDC, EMA representatives. We've heard a lot about Mpox this summer, haven't we? Especially since the WHO launched that alarm call. And we have heard some worrying concerns raised. Human health is a competence for member states, I would stress to those representatives of institutions here. And it appears that the Commission wants to get its hands on more and more of these sensitive areas on the pretext that this would constitute a European reaction. We should not go for such an excessive, inappropriate, non-transparent and costly over-centralisation. It's better for member states to do this. They know the situation on the ground in their own countries. Several experts have stressed that Mpox, while a concern, cannot be compared to COVID-19 in terms of its severity or the impact on the population. Professor Anton Flau, epidemiologist, said that the Mpox mortality rate is relatively low and is not transmissible on a scale comparable to COVID-19. But the Commission's approach appears to be an excessive knee-jerk reaction which would infringe personal liberties in future. And the Commission is scaremongering in an unjustified manner. Now, of course, solidarity and donation of vaccines to third countries can be entirely desirable, but the Commission should not interfere in that. We saw the relatively mediocre results of doing this with COVID. We shouldn't give up our national independence in the field of health in such an unbalanced and untransparent way. So I would like to hear from experts here today as to how the EU can monitor developments, yes, and take measures at the EU's borders. Borders can fulfil a health function. We saw that for COVID-19. This group said that we had to strengthen border checks, especially at entry points such as airports and ports. What is the Commission planning to do on that specific point? Thank you in advance for your answers.
Grazie.
Thank you. Aurelius de Riga.
Дякую, пірмінінке. Thank you, Chairman. I would like to thank the representatives of the various institutions for the information they provided. I have a couple of additional questions. First of all, as has been mentioned, the virus has certain clades, it changes, it mutates, and one question I would like to ask to the representatives of the ECDC. Do you have sufficient capabilities for sequencing, because it's important to monitor the situation in Africa, the spread of the virus, and the other related question is whether the risk groups are changing. Something has been mentioned, but do we have additional changes that could be mentioned? That is, who should pay more attention to the situation? The traceability of contacts it has been mentioned that aid is being provided to member states, but I would be interested in hearing whether there are major differences between the virus of COVID, but how is the difference, what is the difference in contact retracing profiles? Are there any differences here? I agree to the with the colleagues who mentioned that we should avoid raising panic and repeating the errors made during COVID pandemic, the chaotic closure of borders. Some countries have sent messages. I have seen messages among the experts that that raise questions about possible changes of transmission, ways of transmission. Are these just speculations about the spread of the virus through air? So I'd like to hear precise answers so that such speculations do not spread. Concerning the mortality rate, I would be interested in hearing what is the percentage of mortality rate and how much it is related to the ability to provide help by the healthcare systems and the danger of the virus itself, because the differences between Africa and Europe are quite significant. Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Mr. Hebrandi.
Yes, many thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to thank the representatives from the Commission, EMA, and ECDC for their very valuable contributions today. And listening to them, but also to some colleagues here, I see again how grateful we can be that we have this. We made this development in the EU in the last decades, that we have this collective approach based on science, based on knowledge, based on boots on the ground, both in Europe and in Africa, and also based on solidarity. So I would like to thank you for all that, and I'm really impressed by what has been done already by all the three institutions so far. I have a few questions. First of all, it's good to hear that the risk in Europe is low, but it's quite dangerous to see what the developments are in some African countries, especially if underreporting might be a huge problem as well, thanks to the lack of good infrastructure. My first question is, also based on the European stock and the European solidarity. There are at least one member state, but maybe more, who have not indicated that they want to send vaccines to Africa, based on the assumption that they are needed in their own member state. But based on the European system, based on the European solidarity, is that a real threat? Or can member states be more willing to send vaccines to Africa? Because it might be much more important to contain the spread of the virus there instead of keeping vaccines that might also expire next year for our own use in our national member states. So that is my first question. The second question is based on the current Clade 1 understanding that children are much more than before also victim of the virus. And it was good to hear from Emma Cook that there is an assessment ongoing whether the vaccines could be used for children as well. I think I heard you saying that that assessment should be finished quite soon. Maybe you can give some more information about that and how far we are from also providing the vaccines to children, and what that also means for the necessity of the amount of vaccines, because we all know that Africa has a lot of small children. So if we can use those vaccines for these small children, what does that mean for the amount of vaccines that are needed? Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Chili Metz has the floor.
Thank you very much, dear Chair and dear colleagues. Thank you very much also for the presentations that have been done. Very, very interesting. So African Center for Disease Control and Prevention declared Mpox as a public health emergency of continental security already in 2014. WHO declared public health emergency of international concern in 2022. And now again on the 14th of August we heard that. So I'm extremely grateful that we have this exchange today, because it gives us really also the opportunity to assess how much we learned from the COVID-19 pandemic. As African Mpox epidemic gathers pace, the world has another opportunity to demonstrate now really collective commitment to tackling an international health crisis. The challenge is to provide effective diagnosis, vaccines and treatment to regions with poor medical, and we heard that, infrastructure, and to do so more promptly and also more efficiently than during COVID-19 pandemic and previous outbreak for viral infection. Of course, and we heard that too, most likely we do not have to be concerned that it will be another COVID-19, as the Mpox is not easy to transmit and is unlikely to mutate into a form that will cause a global pandemic. However, the nucleate is of particular concern due to its higher transmissibility as the other one, and potential for more severe clinical outcomes, and particularly for children. Today, still, the Democratic Republic of Congo is the epicenter of this outbreak, with 92% of all cases in the African region. Almost 4,000 cases and about 80 deaths have been reported the last week, according to the African CDC, bringing the total in the current outbreak above 22,000 cases and 600 deaths. Fortunately, we know what is needed to contain this health emergency, and it depends on our political will whether we do it or not. So besides physical assistance in the form of diagnosis, medicines, vaccines, a global scientific effort is needed to investigate epidemiology, routes of transmission, symptoms and genetic evolution of the Mpox. Robust surveillance must set up, and especially in the sub-Saharan Africa, where the virus is endemic in wild animals. So despite, and I'm happy about the actions taken by the Commission, ECDC, EMA, HERA, we definitely need to do more to fight vaccine nationalism. And it was already mentioned by two colleagues today, by Timo Volken, but also by Mr. Gerbandi, what the Netherlands is doing by refusing donations to Africa, even though their vaccines are going to expire soon. So I found that quite scandalous. So my question is, are the following: what can we really do, what can the Commission really do, that the Member States really show solidarity with the African countries? What other measures can we take there? And then my second question is about how we need an update also as a Parliament about the pandemic accord. The emergency shows again how much it is needed to have this international pandemic accord. Commission is one of the actors around the table that did not want to compromise on access to drugs and treatments in developing countries. But this shows again we need international agreement that guarantees access to vaccine in case of pandemic. And then also the African CDC urged vaccine manufacturers to share the know-how needed for the vaccines to be produced locally at a lower price. Will the Commission support this call and assist with increasing the local production capacity?
And then can ECDC assist in increasing the surveillance, especially the surveillance capacity in the sub-Saharan Africa, and what is really doing being done there? And then I come also back to the question by my colleague from Renew. We heard that vaccination for children is not ready now yet, so what is the timeline that is foreseen there? And at least can you guarantee that the medicine, that the treatments that we have for children are efficient, that they are proved? So that is another question I have. Thank you. I know I was a little bit too long. Sorry for that.
Grazie.
Thank you. Can I please ask everyone to respect the speaking time? Katarina Martins is next.
Obrigada, Sr. Presidente.
Thank you, Chair. Mpox is a health emergency in Africa, and the first reason that the countries of Europe should act is for humanitarian reasons and solidarity with the people of Africa. I was rather shocked by some of the comments which were made. Fake news, alarmism, prejudice. These are our first enemies, and we have seen some prejudices, misapprehensions and disinformation at the starting point here. There's a low risk for Europe, yes. Let's hope it stays that way. And for now, what we should do is protect our populations and healthcare systems to ensure that we are able to act if necessary. And a common approach to protection of our populations could be helpful, because we're talking about long incubation periods. We're talking about a 21-day quarantine period in Portugal, for instance, if a case occurs. So we need to bear that in mind looking towards the future. At this stage, we also need to look at the mortality rates, the fact that the new clade has a higher mortality rate, affects children more. We need to look at the vaccines available in member states, increase capacity. We don't want to see a rerun of what happened with COVID, which was there was suddenly this rush and then a need for donations from one country to another. We need epidemiological surveillance in Africa, tests. We need rapid tests. And we need to be able to study transmission. There, the EU and its member states can play a vital role in terms of solidarity, epidemiological vigilance and surveillance to know what is happening on the ground. Another couple of questions. We're very grateful to the experts who made their presentations on behalf of the institutions, but it is still clear that there are difficulties with the centralization of vaccine production, the pharmaceutical industry not always acting in the public interest. We need trusted pharmaceutical partners, and we also need to look at contingency plans in the EU, particularly smallpox vaccines that are stockpiled. What is the inventory? It's not clear in Portugal.
Grazie. Passo la parola a
Thank you. Daniel Arnone has the floor.
Danke, Herr Vorsitzender, und
thank you, Chairman, and thank you for all the contributions made so far. The WHO has once again called a global health emergency and the highest warning level, this time against Mpox. But are we moving towards a second pandemic, or is this targeted scaremongering? Since the 70s, there have been regular outbreaks of Mpox in Africa. And what most of the media is not saying is that the current outbreak is mainly focused on the UN refugee camp in Goma, Congo. There and in the surrounding area right now, there are more than 1.5 million refugees. The camp is overflowing. Sometimes there are more than 20 people in a single tent. Their conditions are weakened, and that therefore favours transmission. So what we have to look at first and foremost is whether this new Mpox virus is actually more contagious or whether the higher figures can be attributed to the packed refugee camps. Globally speaking, Mpox is not going to become a wildfire, as many people have said here today, because the risk groups belong are largely homosexual men and people travelling to Africa. The WHO is currently pressuring the government in Central and Western Africa to vaccinate their entire populations. The German company BioNTech recently said that its new factory for production of vaccines was ready. It's only 160 kilometres from that refugee camp in Goma. Is that a coincidence? And that's where they're developing the new mRNA vaccine. Is that a coincidence? And it's also in the last stages of the clinical studies. Is that a coincidence? In May, BioNTech said that in the last months of this year, it would have achieved 90% of its profits. 3 months later, suddenly the Mpox virus was there in Goma. Is that a coincidence? The development of this virus was just at the right time. That's when it began. And we in the ESN are saying too many coincidences. We're demanding a study of the circumstances and the question of gain of function research in the United States, how that could be possibly linked to the Mpox virus. We feel that we're not necessarily dealing with a global health emergency. And we also believe that the scaremongering being conducted by the WHO has to be ended immediately. And we, on the contrary, have to help the refugee camp in Goma, not only with vaccines, but everything they need, particularly more tents and better living conditions. So my question is, what are the alternatives to focus on strengthening the natural immunity of people in Goma? Thank you.
Grazie. Chiedo adesso di intervenire.
Thank you. The chair of the subcommittee on health, Adam Arubas, now has the floor.
Due to the fact that the risk of a new Mpox epidemic is a great concern in my country, so I will speak in Polish. Sierpniowa decyzja WHO o uznaniu małpiej ospy za zagrożenie zdrowotne.
The WHO has not taken any decisions saying that this variant should be seen as a global threat. But today's debate and other debates which have taken place in other fora, particularly with the medical agency, show that we've learnt some lessons from coronavirus and that the institutions are closely monitoring the health situation globally and reacting very rapidly. International cooperation is crucial, but we also need a monitoring and an assessment of the risk and the situation. We also need to see greater participation from independent stakeholders. It's a life and death question. It could have dramatic consequences on human lives, the economy. We have to help avoid committing the same mistakes in the past and to be able to react quickly. Steps have been taken, such as use of AI in the EU to monitor at global level. And already in 2020, we asked the Parliament to take steps on that. We know that the algorithms from a Canadian company made it possible to foresee the risk of coronavirus in 2019. There are other possible solutions as well, as, for example, monitoring contagious diseases around the world. DG ERA is already doing that. But we shouldn't take things lightly. At the same time, though, we shouldn't scare people pointlessly. We simply have to listen to the experts, and then in transparent manner, we have to inform public opinion without allowing for fake news and disinformation. We are expecting DG ERA and member states to realize that the situation is good. They need to look at available stocks of vaccines, as is the case for other diseases as well. But we have to simply act to ensure that the situation doesn't further deteriorate. I would like to know the state of play in your preparations. Firstly, it's not a disease which has an immediate risk to the EU, but that may happen. We saw it with coronavirus. If we work together, hand in hand, we will not be competing for access to limited resources, forcing their prices up, therefore. We could do much more by working hand in hand. We also have to support the Democratic Republic of Congo and the African continent more generally to contain the limit. Their costs will be much lower than if we end up in a situation where European lives and the economy are at risk. This situation affects the entire world, and we have to avoid the risk spreading further because it's a risk for our people and for our economies. Today's debate shows that it was a good idea to set up the subcommittee on health in the European Parliament, and we can see that the subcommittee should become a committee in its full right. Thank you.
Grazie. Grazie, Adam.
Thank you, Adam. And now I give the floor to the representatives of ECDC and EMA, because there have been some questions, some requests for clarification. So we would like, if possible, to have some replies on those, the number of vaccines available, the state of stocks, the fact that Sweden has already started a consultancy, providing advice to people who are travelling, tracing possibilities in European countries, any changes to risk groups, etc. So I will give the floor first and foremost to Wolfgang Philipp.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will start with a couple of answers around the stocks. I can only refer here to the answer that the Honourable Member has received from Commissioner Kyriakides and Lenarčič around the size of the stocks. And we have to see that these vascular use stocks are last resort stocks. They're used only in emergency cases. They are set up in complementarity to what member states have as national stocks. And as this is part of larger work around preparedness of mpox, but also smallpox, there is a certain level of confidentiality needs that need to be associated here. So I'm not in a position to give the precise number of these stocks. But they have been set up and they're available in case of need. Around the traveling recommendations, I would say that is a discussion that needs to happen between the member states, and that is being done in the Health Security Committee. This is part of a stronger legal base also at the EU level to react to cross-border health threats, a piece of legislation that was adopted about 2 years ago now. So that is a discussion that needs to happen among member states. But we have seen then COVID-19, for example, that obviously only aligned advice is useful. The same counts on the request or the question around vaccination recommendations based on the 2022 outbreak. Here again, the Health Security Committee and the Member States certainly will have that discussion with the expert advice, obviously, from the ECDC and the WHO. On the Member States donations, I can refer to the call again from Commissioner Kyriakides to donate doses. This is important, and it's a dynamic process. So we have received quite some responses from member states. It's dynamic, and we are still collecting input here, but looking at the numbers, in addition to the 215, what we know or what is already public is that more than 300,000 will be donated by member states. But that is a moving target. So that number is increasing certainly on a daily basis, and there will be an announcement certainly towards the end of the week with more precise figures in terms of a Team Europe communication once deliveries of first vaccines will have arrived in Democratic Republic of Congo. On the budget cuts and under EU for Health, this is obviously problematic. It represents 25% of the remaining budget under EU for Health for HERA until 2027. So we are looking into prioritization of our activities to be on top of what is actually needed in the response to monkeypox, but also to other priorities. We have to see what exactly should be deprioritized or what can be concluded according to our work plan. It would obviously be good to have bigger budgets and also more flexibility to be more reactive or faster reactive without going through the different programs that provide the budgets. And that is not just now in the context of MPOX. On the question or the reaction around the excessive reaction by the EC, obviously we have learned from COVID-19 and from other outbreaks, and one of the speakers said it as well, it's better to react fast, decisively, and where things happen. So that is done now in a global approach. It's not a Commission or an EU approach. It is a global approach under the leadership of WHO, of the African CDC, to implement the strategic preparedness response plan to MPOX, and we are asked by member states to run this as a Team Europe approach that was successful in the COVID-19 pandemic, and we will certainly continue to do so. But here again, coming to the borders, that's a discussion also around surveillance and monitoring. That's a discussion that should happen in the Health Security Committee among member states. I can only refer again to GlobalCon, the global wastewater surveillance or wastewater monitoring network that we have been setting up and have more than 60 countries signing up for that already. So we will have at the end of the month an exercise where simultaneous monitoring of different pathogens is being done, including on MPOX at airports, at different airports across the globe. On the solidarity aspect and the pandemic agreement, what is important now is that we have a decisive response to the situation in DRC and some other countries surrounding Democratic Republic of Congo, and that is happening, as I mentioned, under leadership of the African CDC, WHO, in close cooperation with the EU, with the Commission, and with some other international players that can actually ensure that vaccines and treatments arrive where they're needed and hopefully when they're needed to get the first wave of the outbreak in multiple places across the DRC under control. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Grazie. Passo la parola.
Thank you. Pamela Rendi-Wagner now has the floor.
Thank you for your questions. Many of you raised the question about solidarity with the affected African regions. Indeed, the ECDC's part with regard to solidarity is that we will send even more experts this month on the ground, to Kinshasa, in order to support the public health authorities of the African affected regions in increasing the surveillance, which is of utmost importance for rapid diagnostic and isolation of cases, to get accurate epidemiological data
this is important, and data analysis, this is also where we support the colleagues in Africa. So we will send more experts there, and also to learn, to close the gaps of knowledge which are there at the moment. We need to know more. We need to study this in Africa. Many of you raised, and it was Peter Liese who raised it as first, the wish for harmonized approaches regarding travel advice. Indeed, ECDC is giving recommendations based on the scientific data available, and in the end, it's up to the member states to implement these recommendations. But for sure, a harmonized approach across the European Union is the most effective one. With regard to travel advice, also border controls were mentioned by one of the MEPs. Well, from a scientific point of view, we have to say that border control seems not to be an efficient tool for the control of imported cases. By the way, clay 2 is still circulating in Europe, and it's really hard to differentiate this at the border right now. And above all, it's taking away valuable resources to do these border controls, which are highly intensive, personnel intense, and it takes away personnel which we need for other very important public health measures. You raised the questions about changing risk groups. Well, with regard to Europe, the risk groups have not changed. We see the same risk groups as with the outbreak in 22, so it's mainly men having multiple sexual contacts. This remains for Europe at the moment, the risk group. With regard to the African situation, I mentioned that children are now affected more and more. And when we look at the newly emerging clade 1B, which is affecting also children, we have to see that these children live under very poor conditions in Africa. It's displaced camps where most of these children live. So transfer this situation to Europe is not possible. So we might assume, and we can assume, that there isn't a specific risk for children in the European Union, not comparable to the African situation right now. So vaccination recommendations for the European Union should be targeted. We need targeted vaccination recommendations for high-risk groups, which I mentioned already before. With regard to sequencing, genomic sequencing capacities in Europe, there is a lot of sequencing capacities in the European member states. The European Centre for Disease Control, we have just launched a survey in the member states to see exactly how and how this sequencing facilities are distributed in the European Union. We do this via the Emerging Virus Disease Expert Network we have across the European Union. But we can say right now that there is good facilities in place. And if there is the need of any member state, we can support them with direct service, sequencing service. The ECDC can directly give this support like we have done it in the COVID crisis. When it comes to transmission routes, this was a question raised also. Is there the danger of droplet transmission? Well, there is some anecdotal scientific reports which say there might be also droplet infection. However, we can say based on the data right now that the main route of transmission is via skin contact, sexual contacts, household contacts, and zoonotic transmission. But for sure, we know that there are many open questions, so more studies are needed to learn more about the transmission routes. Case fatality rate. Well, at the moment, based on the data from the public health authorities from Africa and Africa CDC, the case fatality rate for clade 1 seems to be 3%. But this is, from our point of view and the scientific point of view, overestimate of the case fatality rate. Because in situations like the African one,
more severe cases are the ones who are more likely to be reported, and more severe cases are more likely to die. So that's why there is an overestimate of the case fatality rate. So it can be assumed that the real case fatality rate of the clade 1 mpox virus is lower than that. Actually, I think this has been most of the questions which were directed towards the ECDC. Yeah, I want to just conclude that we need preparedness and response monitoring of the epidemiological situation. That's what the ECDC is doing in Europe and globally, and it needs more cooperation. Why do we need cooperation? We learned our lessons in the COVID pandemic to be quicker, more effective, to use synergies, to learn from each other, and to save resources. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo adesso la parola.
Thank you. And I now give the floor to Emma Cook.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you again, Dr. Lisa, for putting this on the agenda. I think we had a couple of questions, particularly for Mr. Gerbrandy and Ms. Metz, regarding the use of the medical countermeasures in children and adolescents. So I will focus my response on that. I would like to say, to echo my previous speakers in saying our work here is about preparedness and international collaboration, and that's what underpins what we're doing here at the moment. As regards the vaccine, the Invimex vaccine, this vaccine is currently only authorized in adults. But in the wake of the increasing in cases in Africa, we have requested additional data on the use of the vaccine in adolescents, and we're now in a position to evaluate this data. We actually expedited the review of this data in order to be better prepared to give a recommendation for adolescents. Now, the discussion, as I said, we expedited the review, but the first discussion in the scientific committee will take place in about 2 weeks' time. So we will not have a conclusion before that time. At the same time, we're working very closely with the WHO and the African authorities to try to get more information on the use of this vaccine in specific African populations, including in children. And there are trials planned in the DRC and the Uganda, and they will start in quarter three of this year. This will be essential to help inform us about the use of this vaccine in children. And once we have the data, we will be able to use this for further deliberation. As regards tesavirimat, the antiviral, this antiviral is already authorized for use in all populations, right down to infants. There is a study that has been conducted by the National Institute of Health in the US where we have now seen the top line results. As regards the effectiveness of this product in children, we need to look at the more granular results to figure out exactly how this antiviral has been performing when administered to children. So we're looking forward to receiving that data because that, of course, will inform us as to the effectiveness of the antiviral in children. So just to conclude, we are monitoring the situation very carefully. We're both requesting and evaluating data as it becomes available, and we are doing what we can to accelerate the review of any data that comes through our emergency task force and our scientific committees. Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. And now we move to Catch the Eye. And I will start with Anders Kurja.
Thank you, Chair. Dear colleagues, if you don't mind, I will speak in Hungarian. Kedves képviselőtársaim, könnyen elfelejtjük azt, hogy 200.
Colleagues, well, it's all too easy to forget that 200 years ago, general life expectancy stood at 36. 100 years ago, the average European lived only for 46 years, and now the average age is at 80. And we're sitting in this room in order to achieve that aim. Member states have done an awful lot for health and an awful lot to combat disease and illness, but there are no guarantees on that, and that's why we always have to have our eyes wide open and always work to ensure that we can limit contagious diseases, their spread, and that we can further develop our health systems. My colleagues mentioned natural immunity. In the year 1900, child mortality stood at 16%. From 1,009 births, 160 of those babies died before they turned one. So much for natural immunity. We need new therapies, development measures in health, so that we can guarantee that we live to a good age. As one of our colleagues just said, we can be effective if we invest in our health systems, because that is what will shape our health for the next decades and will determine life expectancy for Europeans. We have a very high standard of living in Europe, but we have our earth as well. It's a common good. If there's an epidemic in Africa, sooner or later, it's also going to reach Europe. Borders have been mentioned as well. These diseases are contagious. They spread. And in the modern world, it's very easy to travel. Yes, we come to Brussels, and it's very easy to carry disease and illness with us. And that's why these questions are so important, as are our health systems. Thank you. Tomislav Sokol now has the floor. I would ask you please to respect the speaking time of 1.5 minutes, because then we have to continue our agenda afterwards, and we also have to vote at 12 o'clock. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you all for being with us today to discuss a very important topic. Of course, this is not COVID, and nobody is spreading any kind of panic here, but definitely it's a good thing that we in Europe have set up the system of closely monitoring and being prepared for any kind of future public health emergency such as this one. So I think that this is definitely one step forward that we did in the previous mandate. It should be welcome. Some concrete points. So first, somebody mentioned the powers of the Member States and the European Union on health. It's not true that the European Union does not have any powers on healthcare. So EU can complement national policies according to Article 168 of the treaty, but it has specific powers, specifically strong powers in the area of cross-border health threats. And the reason for this is that cross-border health threats, epidemics, emergencies, contagious diseases, etc., are such that they cannot be contained by one member state alone. So these are problems which cannot be resolved by individual countries. We travel, we are in the Schengen area, we are in a border-free area, so definitely one thing which affects one member state affects them all. So thinking that we can do things individually without a coordination and common European policy is definitely naive, and this is something that is definitely not true. So we need common European approach, we need common European response, and this has been proven many times before, and this is definitely the case, and EU has the power, according to Article 168, to act here. Concrete question, somebody also mentioned BioNTech and the vaccine that they are they are developing. So my question for Emre Cook is very concrete, is what is the earliest time when it could be expected that this this vaccine is authorized? Because this whole theory which has been put forward by some of the colleagues definitely does not have any merit if it will take a long time for this vaccine to be developed. And also on the question of stockpiles, I'm sorry that we couldn't get the answer on the concrete situation of stockpiles in Europe, because it's impossible to discuss policy options as European Parliament if you do not know the concrete situation of stockpiles in Europe, what should be the policy responses, how many vaccines we should export to Africa, etc. So definitely it's not a good practice that you don't get answers on such important things. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo la parola.
Thank you. Laurent Castillo has the floor.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Je parlerai en français.
Thank you, Chairman. I am going to be speaking in French with my doctor's hat on and as professor at the Faculty of Medicine. I think that the COVID crisis we lived through really questioned our public opinion and the health systems. Communication, and I would like to thank the director of the ECDC for this, that the risk is very low and we shouldn't scare our populations stands. We have to prepare. We have a vaccine. It already exists. And it works in two ways. Prevention, vaccination of at-risk subjects, but also people who've been infected can be vaccinated. There's a long incubation, so they could be relatively effectively vaccinated if caught during the first 14 days. We're not too sure about children, but the important thing is that we have to be close to the patients in Africa. It's our role as Europeans, but it's also important not to scaremonger amongst our population. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo la parola a Romana Jergovic.
Thank you. Romana Jergovic has the floor.
And thanks to all our speakers today. Unfortunately, public health challenges are constantly evolving, and current threat caused by mpox is reality. And it is good to hear today that our key public health institutions seems to be prepared. It seems that they know what they are doing. And this situation, of course, calls for solidarity, as it has been mentioned by many of you. But also we need to recognize that by helping Africa, we are also protecting ourselves. So as we heard, some European countries are creating stockpiles, they are not willing at the same time to share it with the African countries. And put it in the mild way, it's not wise. So at this point, I already got answers on some of my questions. So I'm just wondering, are there, beyond surveillance and beyond vaccinations, are there considerations by any broader community protection strategies that we should know about? Thank you so much.
Grazie.
Thank you. The floor now goes to Margherita Della Pisa Carrion.
Presidente.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, MPs, and to the invited experts. Now, I know that there are still many conflicts of interest in the WHO, secret confidential contracts with the Commission, massive purchases of doses, which are not based on objective approach, temporary authorization, exemption of responsibility for side effects. And the Commission looked at the question of these the side effects linked to the COVID effect, because they said they were voluntary. Well, in the light of all of this, what kind of confidence can we have in authorities today? We're missing an awful lot about this disease, the channels of transmission, so it's difficult to decide on measures. We agree with solidarity with those regions in which this disease is spreading and which have lesser resources to address it, but we need a broader approach which has various different actions and that will help reduce contagion and spread. But on the vaccination, we're hearing that it's pretty much the only treatment. But we are really concerned about this situation because we know what many different regional governments are doing, and we know what was done by European governments with the previous pandemic. So we are lacking the details on this. How can we re-establish confidence in decisions taken, that the measures are transparent and reasonable and will not limit health possibilities and the freedom of Europeans? Thank you.
Grazie. Grazie anche per il rispetto dei tempi.
Thank you, and thank you for respecting the time limit. I apologize, I sometimes have to call on people. Well, I would ask, please, to respect speaking turns as well. I asked to take the floor at the beginning of the meeting, and my group has only been given one turn. No, I wasn't talking about your intervention. I was actually thanking you because you respected the timing, and I was apologising if sometimes, you know, I have to repeat this. I come from a country where people stand up and speak 20, 30 minutes. Well, we do that in Spain as well. But our time is limited because obviously we have to vote at 12 o'clock. Thank you.
Parola Richard Terziu.
Richard Terziu now has the floor.
Vă mulțumesc, domnule președinte.
Thank you, Chair. I've been listening to previous speakers, and there are many things I hear for the first time, and there are many things we still don't know. But I will stick to what I wanted to say from the very beginning, namely that when we hear words such as global emergency, medical or sanitary emergency, our first thought is this the COVID once again? Are we starting to breach citizens' rights and freedoms? Will we see more abuse from governments? Will we see more dirty deals conducted at commission level and at member states level? I think none of us here has forgotten those sinister moments where people who had no symptoms whatsoever were simply taken from the streets and led to hospitals like they were taken to camps, to forced camps. And people were obliged to wear masks, cloth masks on their faces, though this was not proven to do anything. Of course, we can't forget the mad race to create those serums, so-called vaccines, and that had adverse effects and still do very serious adverse effects, including death. And this is something that specialists say, not us politicians. So my question and my worry as a representative of Romanians here is, are we going towards the same scenario? I hope not. From what I hear, it looks like it's not, but I hope that people won't change their minds. Now, when we speak of monkeypox, apparently this is politically incorrect, but it is a reality. From the 50s, this virus has been found in monkeys in laboratories. And over 2 years, WHO has declared an international public health emergency for this virus in order to create panic. The first time this happened, it was in 2022, and the second time about 2 weeks ago. So we see a recurrent fact here, declaring this sanitary alert or emergency. And I will end here. Of course, we have to declare infections on international levels, but we should not overemphasize a disease that's only presenting itself in Africa. Now, another thing, I will use this opportunity to address the ECDC, and they should declare that human transmission is more likely to be accidental, and the virus is only spread with a prolonged contact, not an immediate one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will speak in Romanian. Isteria publică generală.
This public hysteria around monkeypox seems to be artificially fueled by international institutions, including EU institutions. This alarming approach, given the reality about the virus, leads to anxiety among citizens who remember the overregulation during the COVID pandemic. Overemphasizing this phenomenon only creates unwanted pressure on stock markets and on EU policies and leads to lower economic growth, lower than expected at the beginning of this year. Basically, this approach only leads us to more uncertainty on the markets. Moreover, given the Pfizergate scandal and given that there is an ongoing criminal a case at the EPPO about a Pfizergate, it is not right to introduce these vaccines without having a proper debate at EU. Just as we did with the anti-COVID vaccines, we need to see, to look better into how HERA acts and how it deals with the companies which have these contracts. Thank you very much.
Grazie. Passo la parola a Rasmus.
Thank you. Rasmus Nordqvist has the floor.
Thank you, and I will keep it within the time and also ask a question that's actually about disease control and how we can prevent this. I have a question for ECDC, because when we look back to 2022 and we saw actually how we prevented the mpox of getting out of control is very much based on the community work as well from especially the LGBTQI community. But we also saw many member states being really slow at actually offering vaccines back in 2022 to these communities. So my question is, how much is it also now looking into specific communities, how to work with them actually to do something about the situation in Europe so it doesn't get out of control? Because as last time, there is a low risk, as you say, in the general population in EU, and we should keep it that way. Thank you.
L'ultimo intervento previsto.
And last speaker, Jonas Gustet.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to come back to the question put forward by Peter Liese in the beginning of this question time about the stocks and the lack of reply from the European Commission. I find it quite disappointing because if we don't know what stocks there are, it's really hard to discuss what possibilities there are to help the countries hardly hit by this pandemic. So I think you should reconsider that position to keep this not official about the stocks. 215,000 doses given to the areas most heavily affected by this pandemic, it's really not much. You need a double doses to get the good protection. It's most likely millions of doses needed. And of course, we would like to know what possibilities there are in the European Union to step up the efforts to help. The confirmed and treated Swedish case has been mentioned numerous times.
There is no risk for any pandemic or spreading of the disease in Sweden. It's been treated. It's been well handled as far as I can see. There are recommendations issued for those traveling to the affected areas. Those mainly concern how to avoid the disease, about health and hygiene and how to act to be able not to be to have the disease. It's not really traveling recommendations. There are traveling recommendations for DRC, but they are mainly from safety concerns. But of course, it would be good to agree on a common position among the member states for these kinds of recommendations. Thank you, Chairman.
Grazie.
Thank you. We shall now give the floor to the CDC and DMA representatives and the Commission for their response. Wolfgang Philipp.
Short.
Thank you very much.
Short speech.
I'll be very brief. So this point came back on the stocks. I need to remind that there's two kinds of stocks. One is national stocks, where not all figures are known and disclosed. And then the rescue stocks, and I gave the position of the Commission earlier. We need to see that we are in contact with member states to find out what actually is needed to be kept in rescue, as these are last resorts. National stocks are national decision based on national scenarios, and there are security considerations around these stocks, not because these vaccines are only again effective against mpox, but against smallpox. So that needs to be kept in mind. On the point around the low number of doses, or 215,000 would be just a low number, it's a dynamic process. There is an implementation plan, discussions with WHO, AFIN, CDC. All of these doses need to be vaccinated as well. You need to have a structure in place that's able to deal with that. We are in discussion with Team Europe to see how further donations or acquisitions can be done to support that process, but that is done in close cooperation also regarding the allocation with WHO and the African CDC. We know from the company Bavarian Nordic, the only producer at the moment at least that we have access to, that's 10 million doses until the end of next year. When it comes to points around transparency and procurement and how HERA is dealing with companies, I can assure you that we are doing this with a full set of professional assets. We're doing this in a transparent way, and we're doing it with member states. So we have, for example, in the joint procurement, we act on behalf of the member states, and they take the decisions on what to buy or not to buy. But it's all done in full transparency, and we are doing this obviously very professionally. Let me also remind all of us that, and ECDC said it already, mpox is not COVID. So we should not start comparing this with COVID and the reaction to it. For the time being, there is a very distinct and enforced reaction and response activity going on in Central African countries. And then when it comes to one point that was mentioned around need for new therapeutics or therapies to deal with measures in health, I'd just like to remind that HERA was especially created at least to deal with the development of medical countermeasures that includes diagnostics, but also treatments, vaccines, and other things for public health emergencies. And that is what we are doing. So far, more than €1 billion has already gone into the development of such medical countermeasures and research and development of such medical countermeasures. And I would like to stop here to be relatively short.
Grazie, Pamela Rendi-Wagner.
Thank you. Pamela Rendi-Wagner.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to one of the first speakers, I think it was Laurent Castillo, he mentioned also the post-exposure
Vaccination, I think this is important to note because it hasn't been mentioned, I think, so far, that there is also post-exposure application of the vaccination, which is particularly interesting and important in high-risk persons with underlying diseases, immunocompromised people. Moreover, there was a question, are there any public health campaigns in place? And yes, ECDC has published a number of reports on risk communication with regard to Mpox, which are very valuable also to the member states. It's highly important to engage with the communities of the risk groups in order to be successful when you want to implement vaccination or any other prevention strategy. The question was raised, are we going to have the same scenario like COVID? We can reconfirm, no. Human transmission, this question was again raised. So from the beginning, the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control states clearly that Mpox infection involves close and prolonged contacts. This is the way of transmission, and this is the main difference also to COVID-19, which is quite of a different dimension. Regarding face masks, the effectiveness of face masks in the prevention of COVID, we have to say now we have definitely sufficient scientific evidence that face masks are effective. Not 100%, but they have a really important place in the range of important prevention measures such as vaccination, hygiene, or isolation of cases. It was shortly mentioned that Mpox was first discovered and isolated in monkeys. This happened in laboratories in the 1950s. This is indeed the case, but I just want to mention that now most of the scientists are quite sure that small rodents in the African regions are the main reservoir of the Mpox virus. Let me conclude that indeed we should be prepared in Europe. We should be vigilant but not alarmed. The risk in Europe for the general population is low. Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Emma Cook.
Thank you very much, dear Chair. And I think I have one question that I really want to address here. And this is about the specific question on BioNTech. Before I answer that question specifically, I want to just reiterate that we are working with many developers because there are needs for new vaccines and new therapeutics for many, many diseases. And for this reason, we work closely with developers who are not at all motivated to develop products for these diseases that have not a huge international prevalence. As regards specific discussions with BioNTech, we have had some discussions with BioNTech. The vaccine is at a very, very early stage of development. It's at phase one of the clinical trial development. This means that it is very unlikely that we will see any approved vaccine for quite some time. But I can say nothing more because we haven't actually seen any data. But just to stress that the vaccine is at an early stage of development. I do think it is important that we focus on the facts and transparency. And I would like to reiterate that EMA is committed to total transparency about the evaluations of the vaccines and therapeutics. All the information is public on our website. This is information, this includes information about the effectiveness of the vaccines and the therapeutics, and it includes information on the side effects of those vaccines and therapeutics. All this information is in the public domain. It's important that we focus on the facts. For the monkeypox vaccine, we have information on the potential side effects. These are rare. The most common side effects are
rashes and injection site discomfort. This information is all available on our website. I do invite you to peruse it. Thank you very much.
Grazie.
Thank you. I think it has been highly worthwhile to listen to scientific data, to listen to these presentations this morning. And the MV committee will be closely following events over the next few weeks and months. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Peter Lisa, for the request to include this on the agenda.
Topic on the agenda of committee. Thank you. Passiamo al.
We can now move on to item 7. The next item. This is a draft proposal for a resolution on the UN Climate Change Conference in Baku, Azerbaijan, to be held from the 11th to the 22nd of November 2024. The MV committee has decided to send a delegation to COP29 with two oral questions, one to Commission, one to Council, with a draft resolution that we're presenting for discussion today. The vote on the oral questions to the Commission and Council will take place today at 12 o'clock or 12:10. Could I please ask you to take your seats or leave? We need to move on because we have to vote at 12 o'clock. So any of you who were here and now wish to have private conversations, please do so outside.
Passo la parola ai co-sponsor.
I'll give the floor to the co-sponsors. 2.5 minutes, may I remind you, Lidia Pereira.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I will speak in Portuguese. Senhor Presidente.
Chairman, dear colleagues. there are always high expectations of COP. That happens every year. This year is no exception. Adaptation, climate financing, broadening the base of contributing countries, the list of developed countries being enlarged, the financial capacity of countries is a vital issue. The EU cannot foot the entire bill. Others need to shoulder the burden too. The EU and its member states are the main financiers of the climate transition globally. The EU constitutes less than 6% of the population, 15% of global GDP, but it represents one-third of public resources allocated to the transition. If you take the case of China, huge economic growth over the last 30 years, China is now emitting more totally and more per capita than the EU. So China should be on the side of financiers rather than the side of those receiving financing. And the same goes for Singapore or Saudi Arabia. So emerging economies need to be setting more ambitious targets and helping the most vulnerable countries, those who will most benefit from the assistance. The EU can play a role of global leadership. It has done so for mitigation. It has done so in climate negotiations, for instance, in the Fit for 55 package. This can allow for a 55% reduction in emissions if it works. But other countries will need to make a similar effort, put efforts into mitigation of climate change. There are other issues here that should be stressed in the resolution. Water and water resource management, clean industry, decarbonisation of industry, not losing competitiveness, reducing the risks linked to climate change. We need to stand up proudly for what we have done and call on others to help as we go forward.
Grazie. Passo la parola.
Thank you. Javi López.
Muchas gracias, Presidente.
Thank you, Chairman. From the 11th to the 22nd of November, as you are all aware, COP29 will take place in Baku. This 29th Conference of the Parties will occur in a context of much weakened multilateralism, whereas climate change is marching forward and multilateralism is perhaps in its sort of last bastion here in the loss and damage from the Sharm el-Sheikh decision in COP27, elimination of fossil fuels, going for renewables, improving energy efficiency, the decisions taken in COP28 in Dubai. Now, as we move towards COP29, we need implementation of those previous agreements. It's an ongoing negotiation. It's work in progress. Whenever there's a full stop, there's a new beginning, and we need new adaptation and mitigation. The EU needs to continue playing a leadership role, as it did in Dubai, as we undergo this major transformation. So, in our view, there are three key issues we should be dealing with. The first major challenge is thematic financing, sustainable financing. In the global stock-taking, there's this clear gap between contributors and recipients. And you hear a lot of rhetoric at COPs from the international community, but we need to ensure that we're putting money where our mouth is. We need to have more creative forms of financing, $1.2 billion annually, reflecting the needs of developing countries where there are different responsibilities depending on the level of economic development which we have. Adaptation is point two. Adaptation to climate change. Clear definitions, strengthening transparency and monitoring mechanisms, national adaptation plans. Three, mitigation. More ambitious mitigation. The first global stocktake shows that current contributions, current NDCs, nationally determined contributions, are insufficient to meet the 1.5 degree target which we have set. With one eye on COP30, parties will need to revise their NDCs for 2035 on the basis of the global stocktakes conclusions. The EU can continue being ambitious. That has happened in the previous parliament. This parliament will continue alongside Commission and Council with a strong voice for adaptation, mitigation and adequate financing for the sake of the entire planet.
Grazie, Alexander von.
Thank you, Alexander Vondra.
Tak, já budu tentokrát mluvit taky.
Well, let me speak Czech this time, because there is no lingua franca anymore. It's the Tower of Babylon is collapsing into a sea of national languages, so please enjoy my Czech. I would like to thank the Secretariat for all the preparations, let me say that there is still a lot of work to be done if we are to support this, because I think this looks like business as usual. Europe is lagging behind in its competitiveness, behind all the world. We play leaders, but we have no followers. And I think that we have to adapt to this situation here in the European Union. First of all, I would like to know whether or not we are able to meet the targets that we have set upon ourselves. I think we should adapt much more, and adaptation measures are something that is missing there. We shouldn't concentrate on mitigation so much, because it's always just empty promises that we never meet. And furthermore, EPP has mentioned this. It is impossible that we pay the bill for the whole world. This is simply a no-go. This will lead to instability of Europe's economy and Europe's politics, and it will help no one. Others must pay too. It is impossible for Europe to carry this burden alone. Thirdly, we need to have a much better balance between the environment, the social dimension and the economy. If we don't do that, every single election in Europe will be a horror. I think no one here wants to sacrifice our democracy on the altar of targets that are not realistic. So there are voices here that say that we should continue the radical trend that we have started. Well, I think, on behalf of the ECR, that we should wake up into reality, and we should act, of course. We need the climate change not to threaten our people and our societies, but we must do that in a way that is realistic, in a way that brings results. We need to avoid a situation where, because of radical requests like ending fossil fuels now, lead to destabilization outside Europe, in the Near East, in Africa, in Asia. Even today, Europe faces a lot of consequences of this destabilization, and it is just silly to put more oil into the fire. So, this is the end of my Czech contribution. And I hope that we will start speaking English once again so that we can listen to each other better. Thank you.
Grazie, Vondra. Passo la.
Thank you. Emma Wiesner has the floor.
Thank you very much. This is our most important tool for global commitment. And the most efficient way of making an impact is walking the talk. So if we want others to start delivering, we have to deliver ourselves. And I think that's very important to remember in this. This radical trend that Mr. Vondra is talking about, that is what your group line is proposing, doing nothing, more than 2.9 degrees of climate change. For me, that is a radical change. If we don't want radical changes, we need results on these global climate meetings. In order to do so, this resolution is extremely important, but it's very weak as it stands now. We are not mentioning carbon pricing only by one word, and it's very much flashing by. We need to really focus on carbon pricing. We need a global price on CO2 emissions. We have pushed it before. and it's hard, but we should not give up. The price on carbon is our most important tool, and the ETS is the showcase of how it should be done. The Article 6 is an ongoing issue. In all of the COP meetings, it's never solved, the Article 6. And we now see how it's being raised by several parts of the world, the US included, to make it weak, to make Article 6 a tool to avoid cutting your own emissions. Things have happened, though. Since the last COP, we now have the carbon removal certification framework on EU level. So we now have a robust framework on how to measure carbon removals and how to make it sound and robust. That should be the lead way on how to implement it also on global level. We need to have a sound framework, making sure that we're not hiding emissions behind the removals. So I think that should be very much in the center of Article 6, and we can be much more focused in this resolution on what we want to see as Parliament when it comes to the result of the Article 6. So we will table amendments on several of these elements. Financing have been mentioned, of course, but also the ambition level. And before I finish, I also have a question for the Commission that I want to start the discussion about, because I know the Commission is in the room. We have a problem with the NDC, the EU NDC, because we need to have our new NDC on EU level by February, according to the Paris Agreement. But the climate law and the initiation of the climate law process is tabled at the same time from the Commission. So how do we then assure co-legislatorship? And how do we ensure that we are staying within the time frame so that we can have an updated NDC in time, but in the same time have a climate law that's been gone through a robust legislative process? Can we manage that? So that's a question to the Commission and a discussion we need to have moving forward.
Grazie. Ricordo a tutti che dopo gli interventi...
Let me just remind you that once we've heard from co-sponsors, I will be opening up the floor to members of the committee on a catch-the-eye basis. Lena Schilling.
Thank you so much. Dear colleagues, this is going to be the 29th COP, 29 climate conferences, and we see the escalating crisis. We see it in Europe, but we see it worldwide. And now we have to take this one even more seriously than we did the first time. And yes, one of the big topics at this conference will be once more finance. We have to talk about that. Finance is the cornerstone, and we need to be clear. It has to be social just, equitable, and vulnerable communities have to be protected. This has to be a call on developed countries, on the European Union, and the member states. First, it is good that we finally reached the $100 billion goal. And now we need to make sure that it continues and reaches throughout 2025. What we need now is for all parties to agree on a post-2025 new collective quantified goal, including safeguards to reach, and we need to reach the agreed quantum. There is no time to discuss anymore. We have to take the actions. It's the 29th conference, and I'm with Emma Wiesner here. We have to provide something. We should also set individual targets for financing, mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage to ensure a more even spread of the financing. And we need innovative sources of public finances for the NCQGs, which has to include high contributions from those that are polluting the most. And the European Union has a responsibility here. Now, as for the EU ambition, the Commission has to revise the European Climate Target Law to set clear and binding post-2030 intermediate targets at latest by 2025. It was good to hear President von der Leyen commits to a 90% reduction target by 2014 in political guidelines. However, I want to stress that the advisory board on climate change actually recommended 95% due to the equity principle. And what we really need, the EU has to phase out coal by 2030, gas by 2035, and oil by 2040 at the latest. And we have to set a phase-out date and process for fossil substitutes. So to sum up,
we must commit to bold financial targets, elevate our own climate ambitions, and safeguard the integrity of these climate conferences. The numbers are clear, the stakes are high, and the world is watching.
Grazie, adesso.
Thank you. Nicolas Faranduris.
Buongiorno, calimera, Sas.
Good morning, and I'm wishing the presidency and our committee an excellent term ahead. On behalf of the left, I'd like to say that we are happy with the draft resolution, and we've put forward some amendments. I think this is an important moment for all of us, that we're going to be in Baku representing the peoples of Europe and the European Parliament. The work that was done in the last COP in Dubai, I think, is reflected in this. I would like to stress two or three things now on behalf of the left. First and foremost, that we really have to intensify our efforts on the loss and damage fund. This was a very specific point, but we shouldn't give up on it. We have to strengthen it. We also have to increase expenditure on biodiversity as well. And the climate change, an important dimension, is the fact that climate change doesn't affect everybody in the same way. There are certain sensitive social groups who are particularly affected. I've seen studies as well that show that women are more affected than men. And so through our resolution, we have to ensure that we have some reference to those most affected by the climate crisis. Another aspect I would like to stress, and we're going to be tabling an amendment on this, on the question of the climate crisis and our political heritage, political goods. There are numerous studies and a lot of research that show that the situation with our political and our heritage is very much an aspect to be taken into account. And we also have to enjoy the question of free speech when we're talking about humanity, the planet, and future generations. Climate change cannot be addressed through limiting speech and expression of views. And I would like to stress the question of some of these global fora and the bit of a contradiction that they are organized in countries which are in the first line on fossil fuels. We're talking about emissions, but we organize meetings which are based in countries which depend on fossil fuels. Also the question of this freedom of speech. I do hope that we'll have an open and free exchange of views and opinions in Baku. Thank you.
Grazie. Adesso.
Thank you. So we'll now hear from committee members. Peter Liese, 1.5 minutes for everyone, please.
Thank you, Chair. I will keep it short. Climate change remains a huge challenge, and we need to continue our efforts to really reach our targets. But more important is to convince others to follow and not only to increase the targets in the European Union. In this respect, a very clear message to all the colleagues. EPP will not support any mentioning of a 95% figure. That's also not what the advisory board asked for. Even the 90% is a huge challenge, and we need to work on conditions. We need to be able to really in industry to do it, and that's not yet the case. So there's a lot of work to be done. And for the international dimension, a 35 target is even more important. So let's start to discuss not only about 2040, but also about 25. Last word on climate finance. We strongly support the Council approach. We need to stop to always ask EU members and the EU to put more money on the table It's time to put the pressure on Saudi Arabia, on China and others that are rather rich and that didn't really give money and they didn't take their responsibility. Now it's time to put maximum pressure on these countries. Thank you.
Grazie, chiedo di intervenire ad Anna.
Thank you. Anna Corrado.
Grazie Presidente,
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to those who prepared this draft motion for a resolution. COP29 is crucial, I agree with others on that, in international fora. As Javi Lopez said earlier, this is one of the last bastions of multilateralism at such a difficult historical juncture from a geopolitical perspective. The EU has restated its level of ambition with the new commission. We have to tackle the climate crisis and energy independence, industrial competitiveness, using the right instruments to manage social fragilities in our countries. All of this means we need to be a leader in combating climate change, as von der Leyen has said. If we're to do that, we need to take account of the need for financing, as others have said. We need to cooperate with developing countries so that we see true cooperation and sharing of adaptation and other mechanisms rather than propping up old-fashioned fossil industries in a kind of colonial way, which unfortunately we have done in the past. We also need to promote adaptation through ecosystem adaptation. One Health, global health. We talked about new threats, new pandemic threats. If there is a disease anywhere on the planet, then everyone can be at risk. We need to look at One Health, One Planet. 2035, 2040, these are good deadlines for targets. But we need to look at the 2030 targets first and foremost. Are they realistic? Do we have the right instruments in place? Unfortunately, in many countries, that appears not to be the case.
Grazie, passo adesso la parola.
Thank you. Nathalie Androuet.
Après une COP au pays du pétrole.
So, we were in an oil country for a COP, now we're in a gas country for a COP. And this will be over the dead bodies, unfortunately, of all those who perished for this, with no questions to the ordinary people as to whether they want to do this too. There's a majority perception that environmental concerns are a little hobby for out-of-touch elite people. There'll be new funds, new international products, but no actual tangible solutions to the climate crisis. In the European Union, obviously we have a climate crisis, but we have limited resources and damage to the environment. But there's a geopolitical challenge too, energy independence and economic policy. We're looking at the Russian gas crisis, for instance, LNG from the US or fracking. Simply shift the problem, they don't solve it. There are environmental challenges that calls that sound unrealistic, calling on industry to do things but without actually offering any solutions. This makes us more dependent on third countries while we applaud supposedly ideal solutions on the basis of ideology such as wind energy. Nuclear is clean. No CO2 emission in electricity production. And wind and solar are intermittent energy sources. So nuclear should be a central pillar. Baku could be a starting point for that discussion. We should go beyond declarations and have solid policies that will give us a sustainable, prosperous future and steer clear of unrealistic targets which will only serve to make us more dependent on third countries who are not always our allies.
Grazie.
Thank you. Jorge Vilalba.
Muchísimas gracias, Presidente.
Thank you. It's not on this draft motion. Look at multi-millionaires in private jet. So they're going to be going to Baku in their private jets to a place which is a major gas producer and then say, oh, companies in Europe, people in Europe, you have to foot the bill for combating climate change, not us. This farce is no longer funny for farmers, for people who've lost their jobs in Europe, for ordinary citizens who are finding that their household expenditure is going up week on week. It's pure hypocrisy. Tripling renewable energy capacity globally, we say, with a restoration of nature law that will limit activities by companies and limit nuclear energy in Europe. They say they're concerned about nature. They discriminate against production sectors who actually work with nature, arable and livestock farmers and fishers. They say they want to combat disinformation, but when they get together behind closed doors to talk about climate, they don't let any scientists in who dare to question the consensus of what the UN is saying. They're a laughingstock. It's just a few people in the elite behind closed doors in rooms like this, and they'll do the same in Baku. It's the final proof of the hypocrisy that Europeans at large are footing the bill of. And then they come back and say, there's no more time for talking, we have to act. In COP29? Seriously? 29? With more and more money coming in from Europeans so that China, Saudi Arabia, and everyone else who's endangering our safety and our energy security can carry on with we're all going under as China and Saudi Arabia make hay.
Passo la parola a Danna Zelenska.
Danna Zelenska has the floor.
Dziękuję, panie przewodniczący, koleżanki i koledzy. Ja w duchu uspokojenia i przygotowania.
Thank you. Well, we want to prepare as well as we can. So in a calm spirit, let me say a COP is a sort of talking shop. Emissions go up, they go beyond all the standards. Young people were saying, don't drink sparkling water, because every time you open a bottle of sparkling water, you're adding to the CO2 emissions, which are already going up anyway. That was the joke on the streets amongst young people last time I went to a COP. I think we need to be pragmatic. We need to prove that the money we're putting in here, and we're talking about billions of euros, we're talking about billions of dollars that for many years now have been going into certain projects. We need to prove that this money is actually being put to good use as an investment. And to confirm what the UCR coordinator has been saying, read the reports of the European agencies, the Environment Agency. We won't achieve the 55% target by 2030. That's what they're saying. So we are slowly but surely becoming the laughingstock of the rest of the world. We set unrealistic targets and then throw this money around. Look at China. China's raking in the cash thanks to Fit for 55. Now, some people haven't got their headphones on. I'll tell them later. We've seen a Volkswagen CEO saying we're going to have to shut down our factories because of the competition from China. And there are thousands of examples along those lines. So, first of all, prove that the money is going to good use. Prove there's a real impact. If you say we need more money, well, let's look at how the money is being used, by whom, and for what. Telling the whole planet we have to move to ETS. It's a game for financial institutions to engage in. They enjoy playing that game, that most ETS participants are tax havens. totally out of the control of the European Commission, Parliament or Member States. Thanks.
Grazie. Passo la parola a Per Holmgren.
Thank you. Per Holmgren now has the floor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Back home in Sweden today and probably tomorrow as well, we will reach 30 degrees, which is the first time ever in September. It may not sound a lot to many of you, but it is another national heat record. And to be fair, of course, a national heat record in Sweden is, in September, is probably not the core issue when we're discussing climate change and the consequences of that. But at the same time, we're seeing globally, all over the world, in most countries, an increased amount of heat records. And it's especially during these severe heat waves that adaptation will be more or less impossible in a very, very near future. And that is, of course, why we need to focus even more on mitigation, because without that, there will be problematic to discuss adaptation, and we will be focusing even more on loss and damage. 5 years ago, in the European Parliament, we declared that we have a climate emergency situation globally. But since that, 5 years ago, the climate on this planet has already changed, because now for almost 2 years we've been on average on the wrong side of 1.5 degrees. And of course this resolution is very, very important, not the least that it is an important tool if we as the European Union wants to show that leadership that we often talk about and actually even often brag about. This is the chance to show that leadership, to really raise the ambitions in this declaration. And I really hope that all the political groups can be backing that ambition. Thank you.
Grazie. Passo.
Thank you. Now the last speaker is Lynn Boylan.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll keep it brief because I know people want to get on with the voting. Others have mentioned the importance of climate finance at this COP, and it has been an important topic for the last number of COPs, and we still don't have an adequate solution to it. I think it's always important to reiterate and remind members of this committee that the EU and member states within the EU, we have benefited from excessive carbon emissions, and those who have contributed least to climate change are the ones who are now suffering the most from that impact. So therefore we have to show that leadership, and we have to attempt to remedy that injustice through climate finance. And I think the question particularly for the Commission is that if COP29 aims to set a new collective quantified goal for climate financing, that we need to provide clear targets, we need to have transparency, we need to have accountability around climate finance. And therefore, it follows from that the new goal should apply to the three pillars of climate finance, which is mitigation, adaptation and loss and damage, and that those all three should be included under the new collective quantified goal. Because that is the best way to ensure that earlier voluntary commitments, for example, around loss and damage, are actually met. So I suppose the question is for the Commission to explain its approach to the inclusion of loss and damage funding under that new collective quantified goal. And also, we need to go back to making sure that climate finance is about a form of grants and not indebting those countries in the global south further. And as I remind everyone, they were least responsible for climate change. Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. Now, before I give the floor to the Commission, I would ask you please to get organised in coming back to the voting cards, because speaking quietly, please, because then we're going to move on to the votes. I'm going to give the floor now to Dimitrios Tsevgolis from DG Klima.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for inviting me again to your meeting. It's becoming an annual rendezvous to inform you about our action regarding the upcoming conference of the parties to the Climate Change Convention. So I will not spend much time informing you about what is at stake in this COP, because you already mentioned a lot of the elements of the agenda for this COP. I will just remind that the main topic, the main mandate for this COP is to set the new collective quantified goal for climate finance that is provided to developing countries. So that's what we are mandated to agree, and that mandate comes from a long time ago, actually from the Paris decision in 2015. We also have other elements in the agenda. We heard from some colleagues here that we have to discuss the Article 6 rules. Indeed, the EU is also preparing for discussing these elements. And we will discuss other issues that have to do with mitigation, with just transition, with adaptation, and loss and damage. Now, the timing of this COP is also important, because it coincides with mandates that have to do not with decisions that we have to take in the COP, but activities that we have to implement as parties. One of those is to provide information through the enhanced transparency framework that we adopted back in Paris in 2015. So this is the first year that we have to provide reports about our activities, about our action and support, and these reports are called biennial transparency reports. So this year is the first year that we provide this kind of reports that apply to all the parties of the Paris Agreement. And the EU is preparing now to provide its report, and the Member States as well, and we are certain that we will be on time to provide these reports by the end of this year. The second milestone has to do with the preparation and submission of nationally determined contributions by the parties. And the nationally determined contributions are essentially the targets and the activities that we will implement to achieve these targets beyond 2030. So all the parties have been called to provide these targets, these nationally determined contributions, 9 to 12 months ahead of the COP of the year 2025, which means from this November to this February. The EU is also preparing to present its own national determined contribution. You know very well that the Commission has made a proposal regarding the target for the year 2040 that will be featured in the European climate law. It is our legal obligation to do that. And this target will become also a target that will be reflected in our national determined contribution. So, to answer straight away the question about where the Commission is standing with these preparations, the target will be presented with the amendment of the European Climate Law, and we are at the hands of our leaders when it comes to the approval of our targets, in order to be able to present these targets in our national determined contribution. Now, when it comes to our preparations for this COP, as every year, we are adopting Environment Council conclusions that are essentially our mandate for these negotiations, our public mandate. So we send our messages to the rest of the world through this Council conclusions. And these are due to be approved in the middle of October. So now we're in the phase where, through the working parties of the Council, we're drafting these Council conclusions. And we're going to have additional conclusions under the ECOFIN on the 7th of October that also cover the issue of climate finance. And these conclusions will speak not only to the topic of the national, of the NCQG that is going to be covered also by the Environment Council conclusions, but also on other issues of climate finance. Now, what is the action that we are taking so far towards our partners? We are making a demarche that has to do with our climate diplomacy, but it covers other aspects of green diplomacy as well, where we are presenting our positions regarding the upcoming COP and our expectations from other parties. So these include elements that many of you have mentioned that have to do with our expectations for the new collective goal. We have made already submission to the UNFCCC, it is public, that has to do with what we expect this goal to concern. We are not talking numbers there, but we are very clear that the current contributors group will not be enough in the future to cover the needs of the countries. We will need more contributors to chip in, but of course the lead will remain with the developed countries as it is stipulated by the Paris Agreement. And we are following up in other plurilateral settings with more characteristically the setting of the G20. You know that there is going to be a meeting of the ministers of the G20 at the end of October, and then we're going to have the meeting of the leaders. So we anticipate that the G20 will send some strong signals towards the COP regarding the capacity of the G20 members to take the lead in taking action, mitigation action, by bringing forward strong national determined contributions, as well as leading into providing support to third countries, to developing countries. And I will stop there. Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you. So that concludes this item. The deadline for amendments is the 10th of September 2024 at 11 o'clock. This now takes us to item 8, the vote on the budget.
L'articolo 216 del regolamento.
Article 216 of the rules ask us to mention the substitutes report who are not members who will take part in the votes. They should be notified before every voting session. So we have Andrea Vescia replacing Christine Schneider.
Facciamo il check.
Let's do the check.
Votazione chiusa.
The vote is closed.
Può aggiungere, Presidente, il mio...
Chairman, could you add my vote against, because I didn't manage to vote? This was just a check, actually. We're just carrying conducting a check, don't worry.
Okay. Adesso esamineremo gli emendamenti.
So we are now going to go through the amendments one by one. I would ask you to vote either in favour, against, or abstentions by show of hands. So, in favour? Abstentions? Against? Adopted. That takes us to amendment number 3. In favour, against, abstentions, that's carried. Amendment 4, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 5, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 7.
Allora, per il voto alle...
So the vote on amendment number 5, we would like to conduct a check, please, an electronic vote.
Votazione chiusa.
Voting is closed. Carried. I was right. Number 7, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 8, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 9, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 10, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 11, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 13, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendments 14 and 15 are identical, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 16, in favour, and 17. 16 and 17 are identical, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 18, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 19, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. Amendment 20, in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 21 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. 22 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. No, we'll do a check on that one.
Chiusa la votazione.
Voting is closed. Twenty-three in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. 24 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Rejected. Twenty-five in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. 26 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Rejected. 27 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. A check. Okay.
È aperta la votazione.
Voting is open.
Votazione chiusa.
Voting is closed. Carried. 28 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Rejected. 29 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Carried. 30 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Rejected. 31 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Rejected. 32 in favour. Against. Abstentions. Check. Voting is open.
Chiusa la votazione.
Voting is closed. Rejected. 33 in favour, against, abstentions, check. Voting is open.
Chiusa votazione.
Voting is closed. Carried. In favour? Against? Abstentions? Carried. 35. In favour? Against? Abstentions? Carried. 36. In favour? Against? Abstentions? Carried. 37. In favour? Against? Abstentions? Carried. Carried. 38. In favour? Against? Abstentions? Carried. 39 in favour, against, abstentions, carried. 40 in favour, against, abstentions, check. 40 is open. 40 is closed. Carried by one vote.